Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you all for joining us on Queensberry Rules Radio. One more week. Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff this week. Flyweights. That's what we got. I'm going to be joined shortly by James Foley of Bad Left Hook here in just a moment. Of course, I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com for anybody who is tuning in for the first time. But come on, that's doubtful. You guys are all return listeners. We know that. Everybody knows the shtick now. Speaking of which, part of the shtick is me kicking in Foley here. Foley.
Big fan of the shtick.
Yeah. We carry a big shtick. Yeah.
We walk softly and carry big sticks.
Well, I don't know about the walking part, but we definitely carry the big sticks. How are you fucking doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I missed you.
I missed you, too. I think we both got some tweets this last week about us not having a show last week, but, man, there was nothing. There was fucking nothing.
We probably should have held a show to announce the return of Ricardo Mayorga and Sam Peter, although I guess that's happened. That just kind of got announced today. But, you know, that might have warranted an emergency radio broadcast.
Well, you know, actually what I tried to do was I was trying to make, like, a preview show for the Jay Leon Love card, and then Blog Talk Radio was like, no. I don't think so. So we didn't really have a choice.
Yeah, I'm sad I missed it. I was out of town, and I forgot to record.
Yeah, well, you know, there's videos floating around, so pretty much all you need to know is that he lost and he got knocked out. And we're sad. It's pretty sad.
Seems like a nice guy. You know, but too bad.
Yeah. You know, whatever. I think he kind of, unfortunately, suffers kind of from the association with a lot of the knuckleheads in the money team. So that just kind of, you know, means by proxy people are going to root against him. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
whatever.
Of course.
Well, James, the boxing world is it's still reeling from the biggest scandal in hours, just hours. It seems that there's been a widespread hacking of hard drives and iClouds of celebrity boxing writers around the world. You know, these hackers now have the largest collection of pictures of virgins outside of Bang Brothers. I mean, is nothing sacred, James?
Hey, at least 10% of boxing writers have lost their virginity. So I resent that.
Come on. Give it a good 12. You know, let's just... I'm sick of being sold short here.
Yeah, I'd like to... That'd be an interesting collection to peruse for sure.
Yeah, I think I kind of blindsided you with that one. Sorry, but it had to be done.
No, I thought
it really did have to be done. So, yeah, everybody, just, you know, go to Pirate Bay or one of those torrent sites. Go ahead and download that package of boxing scribe pictures. Tearing up just thinking about it. So, speaking of fucking tearing up here, this action that we got this weekend, at least the U.S. television action, leaves a little to be desired. So we got Adrian Broner taking on Emmanuel Taylor on the main event of Showtime. What do you make of this card, James?
Yes, sir. You know, nothing to get too excited about. Seems relatively safe fight for Broner. I guess kind of his debut at 140. Right, or did he fight at 140 his last fight? I'm not sure. But, you know, not really... It's not a great fight. I mean, Taylor does have coming off the, you know, probably his best win over Kareem Mayfield. And, you know, he's a decent fighter. So I think it may be, you know, somewhat competitive. I don't expect he's going to just completely blow him out the way that, like, Garcia against Rod Salka. It's not that type of a mismatch. And I think Broner still has a lot of questions about, you know, how seriously he's going to take the sport and will he put the work in the gym to really be at his best in the ring. And so in that sense, you know, this is a pretty good fight, I think, to kind of show that. But, you know, looking at it kind of objectively, I just don't see – I do think that Broner's probably on a little higher level than Taylor, and that's probably going to show throughout the fight. But it's not horrible. I mean, Showtime did a good, nice job putting in that Garcia-Salka card because it's made everything else look better in comparison.
Yeah, you know, it's – well, yeah, I'm sure I'm going to come back to that Garcia-Salka shit in just a sec. But, yeah, I think that it's probably safe to say anyway. I mean, perhaps Broner versus Taylor is supposed to be kind of like the measuring stick of Broner's drawing power. I mean, I'm trying to, like, figure it out because it's not a fight really anybody was, like, asking for. But, I mean, you know, sometimes good fights happen that nobody was asking for, and I'm willing to concede that and everything. But I'm guessing that Showtime probably doesn't really feel like Lucas Matisse is much of a draw because he pretty much isn't for the most part. So basically this entire show is being carried on the back of Broner's name. So that said, you know, the show's probably not going to do that well, numbers-wise. I mean, why would it? Numbers have been down overall this year. You know, and the card has names on it, but the matchups, like, aren't that good. I mean, even Andre Berto might not be able to save this card. The Andre Berto.
Yeah, well, it's another card that we'd rather see the, you know, A side of the main event and the A side of the second fight fighting each other. And it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense as to why that's not happening. Other than that, you know, I guess Broner, the three-division champion, Adrian Broner, needs to kind of ease his way into the junior welterweight division. And, you know, again, I don't understand why Matisse is not getting a better fight. So it's tough to really get too enthusiastic about a card like this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, on one hand, it's kind of like, all right, well, at least I'm trying to stay at least somewhat positive here. And if we're looking at it from that perspective, Adrian Broner, yeah, you know, he's got talent. He's definitely got potential to be a pretty damn good fighter. He's got good hand speed. You know, when he's not fucking around, he's got decent defense when he's, you know, actually being defensive and not just kind of being a jackass. But, yeah, it's just kind of like I don't really understand where the matchups came from or why this needs to be some type of doubleheader. And that's the problem with the whole Garcia-Salka and this thing. It's like, we're getting basically this, you know, tournament at 140 pounds, which is good. I like the tournament format. I like things, you know, culminating in the winners fighting the winners and then, you know, eventually one dude is left, et cetera, et cetera. I love that. But we don't need a buildup to start that, like Garcia-Salka and friggin' right. Lamont Peterson-Santana. Like, we don't need that. Just start the tournament.
You're right. And, you know, if there really isn't any need for a tournament in this particular division because you already have, you know, a legitimate champion in Danny Garcia, and he should be fighting top contenders routinely, guys like Lamont Peterson. It shouldn't be a fight that needs to have tune-ups and take, you know, 18 months to marinate. And somebody like, you know, Broner, who wants to make a splash at 140, a guy like Matisse, who's considered still probably the second best fighter in the division at one point in time, a pretty feared opponent, is the perfect fight to make that kind of a statement. But, you know, I mean, I respect that, you know, Emmanuel Taylor is going to be a good litmus test for where Broner's at. I think he's perfectly competent for that. And, you know, you had to get Matisse on the card to get him kind of back, you know, get him some TV appearance and kind of remind the fans. But, you know, again, it's been a really, really bad year for boxing so far, and there have not been that many matchups that people are genuinely excited about. And, you know, I mean, the fact that Canelo and Lara was a great matchup on paper, and, you know, now we're all looking forward to Hopkins and Kovalev. I mean, these are the two most anticipating fights featuring two of the, you know, Arislandi Lara and Bernard Hopkins, not exactly the most exciting styles, not to mention the fact that Hopkins is 50 years old, and those are the big fights that we're getting, you know, so it's like you have all these
yeah.
young fighters at 40 and 147, and with, you know, the rare exception, like a fight like Porter and Kell Brook, they're just not fighting each other, and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I'll tell you this much. You know, I obviously, I don't really know a whole lot about Emmanuel Taylor past, you know, what I've seen of him, which is, I don't know, maybe two or three fights. But I'll tell you this much. If Emmanuel Taylor loses to Adrian Broner, like most of us expect him to, well, he lost to Chris Algieri and he lost to Prentice Brewer. That would be three, like, horrible dressers that he lost to. I'm just throwing that shit out there. I'm no fashion expert. Prentice Brewer is the dude who wears the crazy zebra print trunks. And then everybody knows Chris Algieri. Chris fucking Salmon Algieri. Chris, you know, Maroon Polo Algieri. You know, is that dude. That dude's wearing seafoam green, you know, loafers and shit. So Adrian Broner, Chris Algieri, Prentice Brewer. That's just not a good lineup to have, you know, I don't know. Call up Calvin Klein or something, dude. We need help.
Yeah, it's not, it's, you know, you don't want to, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, well, Brewer's not great, but Algieri's a solid fighter, you know, and who else did he lose to, or is that his only losses? You know, the point is, like,
yeah, those are,
you know, Taylor's done pretty, yeah, and he's got wins over Mayfield and Victor Cano.
I pretty much,
I mean, he's on that
used
level.
It for the joke. I used it for the joke. I got nothing
well,
against the
worth,
guy. He just hasn't seen that level sure. yet.
Yeah, right. I mean, and you know, it's like, you know, like they say, right? It is what it is. I mean, it's just there's not much you can say about it. It's not a fight that's expected to be competitive. It could be competitive, but it's clearly another fight designed to, you know, get the A side a win on paper. I mean, this is a fight with a very clear A side to it. Adrian Broner, who's expected to get a win. You know, and that's
yeah.
not at that level when you're Adrian Broner and you're calling yourself a three division champion, which I hope we already thoroughly debunked last time. You know, you shouldn't be fighting fights like Danny Garcia where you're just a, you know, presumptive favorite, a, you know, over a 10-1 favorite, and it's just, this is really just to get a check mark in another, you know, in the win column. I mean, you're a championship level fighter fighting for belts ranked in the top five of whatever division. You know, you should be fighting something close to a 50-50 fight because there are those opponents out there.
Well, you know, this is like a pretty constant theme, you know, when we repeat stuff like this. And so for people who listen to the show, and I know there's like a handful of people who listen every week, and by the way, thank you very much. But for the people who do, they're probably listening to this going like, fuck, dude, again? Like, we're going over this again? Well, I mean, yeah, it's just kind of part of it. I mean, but the thing is, as we all know, you know, Adrian Broner has fought once since last December when he lost to Maidana, and that was against Carlos Molina in a, you know, probably closer than expected fight where he got hit quite a bit. You know, and that was the one at 140 pounds, so he fought that at 140 pounds for some fucking belt. I don't know. It was some, you know, fringe thing. And in any event, I mean,
well,
so in any event, we're
world champion.
What's that? Oh, yeah.
We might as
well
call him a four division world champion then, if that was for
why
an
not?
Interim or whatever. Oh,
why
yeah.
Not?
Wait, here. It's WBA International Light Welterweight title. Four division champion.
The Western North Dakota USBA, you know, whatever. So, in any event, it's just kind of like, all right, you guys can do this tune-up type of shit. That is totally part of boxing, but it's not part of the schedule when you're fighting twice a year and both of them are tune-ups. That's like, that's not okay. So that just kind of needs to be stressed. This is cool. Like, you know, the kind of measuring stick type of fights, these things are good, but that shit should be happening. That should be like two fights of the four of the year, you know? It's ridiculous. So, yeah, it's just kind of stupid that, you know, it has to be like that. However, the fight itself, it's good to see Taylor get an opportunity. And, you know, I am kind of, I don't know, Adrian Broner just seems like the type of fighter that can be caught slipping sometimes. He just is. Like, he messes around too much. He messes around outside the ring. Doesn't really seem to take it all that seriously. After losing to Marcos Maidana, it sounded like, you know, he was like, oh, you know, maybe a little introspective there for about half a second and thought, you know, maybe I do need to get a little bit better. And then, you know, he put his grill back in, got on a scooter, crashed it, and was like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, I who knows? Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's not somebody. But you know, at the same time, with the interesting thing about the Maidana fight, it kind of showed us a dimension of Broner that, you know, we hadn't previously seen. I think it did show some of his limitations, but it also kind of showed the X factor.
That's true,
you know,
yeah.
He did respond really well to adversity, you know, and then took some big shots and got hurt and came back and fought till the end. So in that sense, you know, I think that it answered some questions, you know, but can he put it all together, you know, and can he kind of get back to the foundation? And the other thing, you know, about Broner is so much of his success was coming at those lower weight classes where he was just so much bigger and faster than everyone that he was fighting. And it really just made him look like a beast. And I think the fights against Malignaggi and Maidana probably gave us kind of a closer picture to reality of, you know, where Broner is and what we can look forward to.
Yeah, and I'm all for, you know, seeing where this dude's at. And I will say that I think the thing that probably hit me the best about the Maidana fight, as far as Broner goes and learning about Broner, is actually his chin. Because he took a whole bunch of, like, really clean, you know, bombs, and he went down, yeah. But, I mean, there were a couple that were the types of punches that, you know, rattle you to your toes, and he still made it to the end.
Yeah.
I thought that he kind of, as they say, bitched out a little bit and with the fouling and stuff like that and kind of trying to get a DQ win. However, you know, going back to the chin and the toughness, it was a surprise. I didn't expect that. When he started getting hurt early in the fight, I was like, there's no way he's lasting. So, yeah, I think that there is positive there, and that's kind of what's frustrating about guys like Broner, of course, that there's more. Like, if there was just a little bit more effort or a little bit more dedication, whatever it is, we would just be able to see a more complete fighter, you know, a guy that's serious about the sport and not just some, you know, knucklehead.
Well, I think hard work and dedication.
Yep. That's right, dude. Fucking Bandcamp. Well, let's move on to self-tattooers. How about that shit? Lucas Matisse taking on, you know, Roberto Ortiz. People probably aren't that familiar with him because he's not a familiar fighter. So, you know, this is pretty much the story here, obviously, right, with this card. Let's not be a little too redundant, but point is, Ortiz hasn't yet fought outside of Mexico. This is his first fight outside of Mexico, so that doesn't always mean anything, per se. You know, you can have good fighters that only fought in Mexico. However, generally speaking, when fighters are kind of like, you know, centered around a certain place, wherever it is, unless it's like L.A. or New York or some, you know, boxing haven, it's pretty much we need to see them step outside of that region to see how they actually do. That said, he's taking on a guy in Lucas Matisse who punches pretty hard, is experienced, a pretty good boxer, and also fairly tough himself. So, yeah, is there any way? Is this Ortiz character going to win, James?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, it clearly, you know, that things go according to the script. It'll be a big win for Matisse, and there's not really any reason to think that it won't. You know, it does kind of raise a red flag that Ortiz is 31-0, has never fought for, you know, even one of the alphabet titles, you know, hasn't fought really anyone of note, anyone near the top 10 at 140 pounds. I mean, you know, he's going to have a shot here. He's never lost. This will be obviously a huge step up.
Well,
and
sorry to interrupt, but he actually does. He does have one of those silver dealies, one of the, you know, the whatever, you know what I'm saying, the gold, silver, you know, I mean, I don't, they don't count, do they? Come on, we can't let them count.
No.
So yeah, you're right, they don't, he hasn't won shit. Go ahead.
it's just the fact that we've never heard of him makes you realize that he's not really, wasn't considered to be really a great prospect in Mexico, and so he hasn't fought anyone of note. 28 years old, and so it does seem pretty unlikely that he's going to present Matisse any problems, although, you know, Matisse had a lot more difficulty than we thought he would against John Molina, but, you know, still, I think even Molina probably was a lot more accomplished and definitely had fought better fighters than Ortiz has. So, and, you know, this is probably even a step down from Molina without having ever seen Ortiz fight, but just looking at that on paper. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? But we'll probably get a spectacular Matisse knockout. But, you know, it's like these are getting kind of old. You know, the spectacular Kovalev knockout, the spectacular Golovkin knockout, even though they've kind of steadily increased their, you know, level of competition. When you have fighters like Matisse and like these guys who are huge punchers, exciting, you know, and good boxers too, we want to see them fighting really good, fighting good fighters. And Matisse has gotten some big fights before, obviously against Garcia and Devin Alexander and Zab Judah. But there's no reason why he shouldn't be right back in the mix and fighting. I mean, we saw what he did to Lamont Peterson, and yet now we're sitting through this build-up towards Garcia and Peterson. So I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense. I mean, because we have this collection of pretty damn good fighters at 140 pounds. It's one of those divisions that's fairly deep. You know, I mean, as far as, well, it's somewhat top-heavy, but still, the top-heavy part is pretty good. And there's, on top of that, a bunch of matchups that are totally possible, you know, totally easy to make. But there's still, for whatever reason, like this delay in making them. And it doesn't really make any sense. However, to kind of touch on what you said with John Molina, that kind of adds a little bit of, like, a little bit of an X factor for me, because most people were looking at that fight going in and thinking, well, you know, Matisse should thrash him pretty easily. But he had a pretty serious struggle on his hands to the point where it's, you know, considered a fight of the year front runner for this year. You know, granted, we haven't had a whole ton of offerings for that, but still, it was good enough that it's, you know, in serious contention for a fight of the year. That said, it's kind of raising questions, I think. Don't get me wrong, John Lina, super nice kid, fun to watch, but we've already seen him, lose against guys who aren't, we didn't think were on that level. So it was just strange to see Matisse, a guy who a lot of us thought was kind of indestructible, and then he lost to Danny Garcia, but it was like, all right, well, you know what, they kind of built to that. Now Danny Garcia is the champion, so it's like, well, you know, he lost to the champion, what are you going to do? That was an understandable fight, but then moving on, and he's kind of almost comes really close to losing to Molina, and it's, I don't know, I think it kind of made some people scratch their heads about what exactly they saw in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think he's shown more vulnerability than maybe we didn't expect, you know, getting knocked down by Garcia and knocked down a couple times by Molina, sure, but, you know, at the end of the day, he beat Molina, beat him up pretty badly, got the knockout, he beat the fight with Garcia was still relatively close. So I think he's still, you know, he may not be the next Manny Pacquiao or whatever, but I think he's still clearly one of the best fighters at 140. And, you know, we've never heard of Roberto Ortiz. And I imagine that he'll, you know, that'll still probably be the case after Saturday.
Yeah, it's I don't know, I just wish we didn't have to sit through a card like this to whatever. Yeah, redundant, repeating myself. So I think that the eventual, you know, the outcome here, at least we hope, is going to be Broner Matisse, and hopefully they don't find a reason to not make that fight. Because if they're planning on, it would be just such a, it would pretty much be basically Adonis Stevenson taking on Fanfara, you know, expecting to get a big matchup in his next fight, and then it getting aborted. So if it doesn't happen, then it would just be a huge waste. I guess we'll have to see what exactly happens. But, you know, what are you're thinking?
Yeah.
Stoppages both ways here?
I'm kind of thinking Broner by decision and Matisse stoppage. But, you know, the other thing that people keep pointing about to that Fanfara fight, and, yeah, you know, it's a valid point. Fanfara is not elite. But Fanfara still was a top 10 light heavyweight. I mean, these guys are not really even top 10 junior welterweights. You know, yeah. So even that fight, even though it was clearly kind of designed as a setup fight for a big, but that's how it should be. You know, Stevenson at the time we thought was looking for a big fight with Hopkins or maybe, you know, maybe Kovalev if something could be worked out. And he was fighting, you know, a top 10 contender in his division to get to launch to the kind of that mega fight against like the top contender, you know, top challenger. Here we just have these guys fighting, you know, I'm not going to say journeyman because Ortiz is still an undefeated prospect. Taylor's, you know, a younger guy, but it's just they have such clear underdogs, you know, and guys who haven't really accomplished anything at 140. And so, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I don't know, man. Who knows, dude? In this climate, I doubt that Broner Matisse does happen.
I hope it does,
but I wouldn't.
I hope
it
does,
I mean,
too, That's the exact, like, that's kind of the other outside facet of this issue is that, you know, with all of this turmoil and all the bullshit going on within the sport, you know, among the top promoters and managers and advisor and all this fucking shit, you know, I think that if you're really building towards a fight that's like a year in the making, you're taking a huge risk that it might not even be possible like 2 months from now. You know, like the networks might not buy into it because there's some conflict, or this guy fucking sent pictures of his fucking lingerie in a dildo on this guy's phone or something, you know, there's like some shit every other week. So, you know, building this thing up is just kind of like, I hope it does get made because otherwise, like I said, it'll just be a huge waste of time. And we've had enough wastes of time this year in 2014, especially after last year, dude. Last year was kicking ass. What the fuck?
I don't get it. I mean, there's no reason why you need to protect fighters. Like, you know, Danny Garcia was at the, you know, his highest marketability right coming off of that Matisse win. And, you know, to kind of hold him out and scale back his competition and trying to kind of sell us this Lamont Peterson fight. Like, I mean, Peterson's a good fighter. Maybe he could beat Danny Garcia, but it's not something that we're like anyone's really clamoring for. You know, so it's like, I don't understand this whole concept of like, you know, Broner, we need to kind of like, I don't know what they're protecting them for. The way to, you know, increase their marketability and make them bigger stars is by fighting against each other and whoever emerges comes out of it. But, you know, so who knows? I mean, maybe we will get this, but that's the other thing is a card like this should just be a no-brainer. And then you do a whole card with, you know, Garcia, Peterson, Broner, Matisse on the undercard, but of course, like, that wouldn't even happen, you know, if the fights get made, they'll try to blow them up into, like, this huge event, Garcia and Peterson with some shitty undercard, and Broner, Matisse would be its own thing. I don't know, man, it's just, that's boxing these days.
Why are we fans of this sport? We are idiots. Oh, but we got a podcast, and we blog.
Yeah, that's why we do it.
You know. So, well, you know, on a slightly more serious note, Andre Berto literally might actually have to save this card. Seriously. He might actually step in and, you know, make some good fight. I mean, because he could just lose to anybody at this point, it seems like. I don't know what the hell that guy is going on, but he's usually fairly fun to watch, you know, and there's a decent chance he'll either get really badly swelled up or knocked down or knocked out. So he might wind up saving this card.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's always drama. I don't know. I don't think Steve Upshur Chambers really presents too much of a threat to him, you know. But like you said, it is Berto, and we've kind of seen him fight down to the level of competition, or maybe he's just not that good. But so, yeah, anything's possible. But, you know, it's like this is what it's come to. We're trying to complement the card by the return of Berto.
Dude, you know what? Steve Upshur Chambers sounds like a jail in Harry Potter.
I haven't read Harry Potter. I can't go there with you.
Thanks for fucking up my joke. Fuck!
Sorry.
Well, seriously, though, looking at this dude's record, though, he's coming off two losses. One of the losses is to Louis Collazo. You know, he doesn't have a ton of, like, super recognizable names on his ledger. He's got Ben Anker. I know who that is. But Bayon Jargal, who's fought on Friday Night Fights a few times, but is, like, you know, somewhat fun to watch, but super limited. So I think that we could probably expect Berto to win here. But being Andre Berto, anything could happen. It could be a mighty struggle. And, you know, if it is, that could be fun, too. But, man, Foley, I know that you're not a huge fan of the super tiny guys. And in boxing, too. Also and in boxing. But,
or of boxing.
Yeah, or in boxing. But this coming weekend, seriously, like, I mean, the Showtime card is the Showtime card, and we have to talk about it because it's on U.S. television. And look, man, I named the show Broner versus Taylor preview because, bro, nobody fucking listens to us. We need the help. We need clicks. We need listens. This is what it is. But the real action this weekend, the flyweights, that's where it's really going down. So I hope you've prepared.
I've studied a little bit. That's what obviously most of the kind of hardcore fans are looking forward to because they, you know, rightfully recognize that the Showtime card is basically just, you know, tune-up slash mismatches. So, yeah, man, I'm fired up. I'll probably actually...
Yes. Yes. So, well, I mean, it's kind of like you can really choose either or as to which one is the attraction this weekend, but I guess we'll start out with Akira Yagashi versus Roman Gonzalez because Gonzalez probably has the biggest name of any of the flyweights that are fighting this weekend. In any event, Gonzalez, big banger, Akira Yagashi, kind of a twitchy style, but also a pretty fun guy to watch usually. And going into this fight, I mean, Roman Gonzalez is moving up a weight class, and the question is he going to carry his power up? He's a huge banger. Is he going to carry it up, James?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty unqualified in general to kind of preview this because I don't, like you said, I haven't followed that closely in the smaller weight classes, but I have seen both guys. I know Yagashi was in that kind of fight of the year against Porn Salon a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I think he's the lineal champ at 112 too. And obviously Gonzalez has become kind of just strung up a ton of highlight reel knockouts on YouTube, and I've seen a few of his fights in full, like notably the one against Estrada, who's fighting on the other card. So, yeah, I mean, from 108 to 112, it doesn't seem like a huge jump as far as will his power, you know, translate. And on top of that, Gonzalez just seems like a special kind of fighter with, you know, a lot of facets to his game and really one of those great small guys who does distinguish himself. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to this. Definitely. I think the other fight probably will turn out to be a better, like, action fight because I just think Gonzalez is probably going to have too much firepower for Yagashi to deal with. But I think it's great that Gonzalez has an opportunity to become, you know, the real champ at 112, keep building up his resume, and, you know, he probably should be among those talked about, you know, in terms of pound for pound, one of the 10 best guys or whatever. Because that's kind of the whole point of that is you're, you know, regardless of weight class and as dominant as he's been down there, and he's fought with Yagashi too, he's fighting, you know, pretty much the best fighters in those weights. So I think it's good. Definitely we'll tune in, and I think Roman Gonzalez is the kind of little guy that would fit in nicely on a network like HBO or Showtime, and I can't imagine that you couldn't have purchased this fight, you know, for probably what they're paying to watch see Andre Berto against Chambers.
No shit. Yeah, and that actually is the perfect setup for me to bring up, you know, a couple guys that we've had on the show that we've talked about stuff like this with Cliff Rold, for example, Doug Fisher. Both of those guys, you know, we talked flyweights, and, you know, we talked the kind of the angle of the unification matchup that we had between Brian Deloria and Tyson Marquez a couple years ago in 2012 on that, you know, epic card that Roman Gonzalez was also on. And Juan Francisco Estrada too. But regardless, when you brought up the lineal thing, just to kind of go into the backstory of that, if I may, it's because the lineal flyweight champion was considered to be Pongsaklik Wonjong Kam, who was stopped by Sonny Boy Jaro in a shocker not too long ago, and then he lost to what is his name? Igarashi, I think it was. Igarashi.
Right. Okay.
And then that's who Yagashi beat to get that WC belt. So that's why it's kind of like if you were to look at this on paper, and you know, depending on how it's basically marketed, a lot of the time. Well, because, you know, the belts are a way of selling the fight for a lot of promoters and stuff like that. And, you know, rightfully so in some regards. But regardless, if you look at this on paper, you have Juan Francisco Estrada, who has two flyweight belts, and then you have Akira Yagashi, who has one, yet he's the lineal champion. And people are probably like, I don't even understand what the fuck you're talking about right now. Well, that's why, is because the guy that beat the guy that beat the guy, you know, that would be Yagashi. However, the other fight we'll get to. Point is, the way that you set that up, too, with the network issue, these guys are fighters who generally produce very entertaining fights. This is the opportunity for networks to step in, I would think, and really seize, you know, these little guys, put them on television. I mean, the people who watch them consistently, and I mean, I know that there aren't a whole lot of us, but the people who do, they'll tell you all the time, man, this is good shit, this is entertaining, you should watch, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So, unfortunately, Showtime and HBO in particular have a history of turning down, you know, lower weight type of fights. For example, HBO turned down Israel Vasquez versus Rafael Marquez 3. And that was after the first two were like epic wars. You know, you had a rubber match coming up that couldn't lose, and HBO was like, I think we're good, actually. I remember hearing that and going, what? They won't buy that for like, it was something like $1.5 million or something like that. You know what I mean? Like you said, the whole Andre Berto, they're probably fucking paying something like that for Andre Berto, you know?
Lampley,
it's like, oh, jeez. Lampley has that pinned inside his lapel right now. He has that in a money clip in his fucking sock.
Yeah, it's, I think that, you know, and I hate to say it, because I personally have nothing against the lower weight classes. I really just didn't follow them because they weren't on TV as much, you know.
Yeah. No,
but
yeah.
I do think there's some people who, you know, they watch boxing as kind of a voyeuristic, like, wish fulfillment thing or whatever, and they want to kind of see, you know, you want to watch fighters who you know could kick your ass. And I agree that, like, these guys probably could whoop my ass, giving them 50 pounds. But, you know, I think people look at them and, like, it's like, how much do they weigh? 108. It's so tiny, it's so diminutive that I think for some people, they do. I mean, there's no denying it. The heavyweights were the most popular division when the heavyweight division was
yeah.
up. And as you get lower, and I do think that's some kind of psychological issue with the fan that, like, you're watching such small guys. A lot of these guys are 5'2", 5'3", you know. And I think when you get below featherweight, bantamweight, you're generally it's either like huge guy like Nonito Donaire, who's just shrinking himself down to make 112 or whatever, 115, or guys who are like 5'1", 5'2", that type of thing. And I think some fans do just prefer to watch bigger fighters, I guess.
Well,
I think there's some psychology from HBO and Showtime as to why they don't broadcast those fights.
Well, and I think that it should also be fair to point out that there probably aren't a whole lot of promoters that are, you know, operating inside the U.S. that have good relationships with a Showtime or an HBO that are really pushing these fighters either. So I think that there has to be some responsibility falling on them. But, you know, it's a missed opportunity, and it's historically, the cutoff as far as weight seems to be about lightweight. When you start getting below lightweight, there seems to be usually a pretty big drop-off. Sometimes featherweight, you know, too. There have been maybe featherweight because, you know,
yeah,
in the 40s. Anyway, but below that, it's pretty tough. And I think that that's also part of the reason as far as the popularity as well, because then it winds up being work for promoters. You actually have to go out and promote. They don't just sell themselves, you know what I mean? Like, it's lazy. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, and it's kind of a just going down the beaten path type of approach, and it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it other than that, as far as why they're not popular and why they don't get on TV more often. But, you know, I can't remember HBO or Showtime airing anything below Bantamweight in a long time.
Right around the early 2000s there, you know, they had, like, some Johnny Tapia fights. You know, those were generally right around Bantamweight or whatever, but I'm trying to think of, like, anything much below that, and there really wasn't. I mean, fuck. Yeah, that was really about it. You know, the lowest they went usually was, like, Barrera, Hamed, Morales. They were down to 122. That was about it. Past that, dude, they're just not really invested. And I kind of wish that, you know, when HBO had said, fuck that, dude, we're done with the heavyweights a few years ago, they would have said, all right, well, let's go the other way. Let's see what they got down there. But, you know, of course, that would have taken some thinking. That's tough.
Well, I wonder, you know, a lot of it's just, like, you know, financial money-driven. But, I wonder if Gonzalez was from Mexico, you know, a bigger country with a more rabid boxing fan base, if he would be more popular even fighting in the lower weight classes, just being so explosive, almost 40-0, you know, and that would, that kind of economic leverage could carry him to be on TV, because of in the past, the fighters that low weight classes all were pretty popular. Like, what are those dudes? I'm not thinking of the name, but the great, like, flyweight fight trilogy from, like, the 90s with the guy from Arizona. Fuck, I can't think of the guy's name.
Are you talking about Carbajal?
Carbajal. You know, it's like the fact that they were so popular is what got them onto the networks.
Yeah, they were. Well, that was. I know that it's kind of like, you know, all right, there has to be a whole bunch of different factors here that all come together and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it has to be the right time and with the right promoter and all this type of shit. But even with, you know, with Michael Carbajal, well, shit, they fought, was Carbajal Arce on HBO? I can't remember. In any event, that was like 99 or something like that. But Carbajal Gonzalez, I guess. However you're going to say it, those were like, you know, again, like locks as far as action, because they were fucking great fights, and so they got picked up. And so I kind of just wonder where the disconnect is then. If was there just like network executives that were more willing to take a chance on little guys? I don't know. It just seems kind of silly.
I agree. I don't know why. And actually, I remembered that, you know, when Estrada was on the undercard in Macau at that HBO card, you know, he was by far the fighter that the most people were talking about afterward. It was one of those Zhu Shiming cards. I think that was after he had lost to Roman Gonzalez. Oh, against Brian Valoria.
Yeah.
And he got a really positive response from most of the boxing fans on Twitter. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because, you know, obviously fights like Berto and whoever Peter Quillen ends up fighting next, if he ducks the fight with Korobov, you know, like those fights are not getting a positive response from boxing fans.
Well, I brought it up earlier. I brought up, you know, the shtick and the running gags, as it were, on the show. And, of course, one of them is me taking anecdotal evidence from being married to a Mexican wife into account when we talk about shit on the show. And speaking of which, I guess we'll just move right into Juan Francisco Estrada versus Giovanni Segura. But even Estrada, you know, he kind of just came about in that Gonzalez fight in late 2012. At least I didn't really know a whole lot about him going into there. I think most people expected Gonzalez to probably handle him. And while Gonzalez won and semi-comfortably, it was still a very entertaining fight, and Estrada gave a really good account of himself in it. Since then, he's not a superstar by any means, but, you know, my wife, who borderline fucking hates boxing, knows who he is. So, you know, in any event, I think that just kind of pointing that out is somewhat anecdotal evidence that basically maybe he does have a bit of a following, or maybe this could have been sold in some way, especially with Giovanni Segura, who is experienced, has faced bigger names, you know. So
Yeah. In any event, like you said earlier, I think I would have to expect that this fight is probably going to be fireworks. What do you say?
I think so. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, you know, but I guess I favor Estrada, you know, just being younger, fresher, not having taken as much damage. I kind of thought of Segura as being a little bit past it, you know, and kind of almost borderline shot. And, you know, he had a really good fight with Hernan Marquez that kind of showed that he was back, that unification that you were talking about, showed that he was still, you know, a viable. I mean, that wasn't the unification fight, was it?
No, that was Valoria Marquez. But what you're talking about, yeah, that was a fun fight too.
But Segura Marquez, yeah, was a good fight.
Yeah.
He came back and won that. I was just surprised that he had lost to Valoria. And I think with Segura, you know, he's another big puncher for the weight. Had those really good fights with Ivan Calderon, although it was kind of at the tail end of Calderon's career. So, I mean, it's a good fight. And, I mean, I think hopefully this will set up the fight that I think most people would want to see is Estrada against Gonzalez, the rematch. And that's something, again, that it would be nice if we could get some, you know, U.S. TV coverage for, because it's probably the biggest fight that could be made below bantamweight.
I'm sorry, I missed just the very last part of what you had said.
Oh, just saying that hopefully, you know, this will lead to a rematch between Roman Gonzalez and Estrada. And that
exactly.
You know, that's a fight that's probably the biggest fight that can be made below bantamweight. It, you know, it should be on US TV. I mean, again, like we're getting, you know, tune-ups of guys who, where's Andre Berto fit in? Like, you know, top 50 at welterweight. So, I mean, it's frustrating because, you know, part of the reason why these divisions aren't as popular is because they, you know, it's like. They're you know, they don't get television coverage, but then they say, well, they're not getting television coverage because they're not as popular.
Yeah, if you're ever like unfortunate enough to have to stay home and like try to watch daytime television, any type of daytime television, you're going to be seeing all sorts of like commercials for technical colleges and shit like that. And hey, man, if that's what you got to do, go for it. But there's always commercials that have some type of little. Repeating, make you want to stab yourself in the face shit where it's like, I can't get a good job. I can't get a good job because I don't have a degree. I can't go to school and get a degree because I don't have money. I don't have money, and, you know, and it's like this repeating shit. But that's exactly what the fuck this is. It's like these guys can't get a platform to perform and, you know, make a name for themselves, and they won't be put on the network because they don't have a name. Like, wait, hold on, what? Isn't that the fucking promoter's job? Isn't that the job that makes the name? Come on. You know, do your jobs here. Put some work in. Showcase us fights, these fights that people want to see. Listen to what hardcore fans... Come on, man. We're purists. Listen to the purists.
Well, there's clearly a market for these kind of fights, and all you have to do is just follow boxing fans on Twitter, and that this is what everyone's talking about. No one cares about the Broner Taylor card. You know, I mean, it's all about these flyweight fights, and that's, you know, something that I would definitely look into if I was running one of the two major networks, because you think it would be, you know, I mean, what does it hurt to put a fight like that on an undercard and spend a couple $100,000? You know, you're giving Danny Jacobs $700,000 to fight, you know, Fletcher or whatever.
Yeah, one of the dudes who actually does listen to us pretty much every week, Mickey Chicago on Twitter, the dude from, you know, The Wire, that guy, he had suggested that basically HBO should be using HBO Latino for fights like this, and I think that's a great idea, and that's the type of, I mean, Mickey, we love you. No offense, though, that's not like a brilliant idea. It's not like we needed to hire somebody to have an idea like that. But the whole point is that somebody at HBO can't come up with this idea. Like, these are executives and like people who are making a whole shitload of money. And this dude on Twitter who listens to our show is like, hey, HBO Latino, why don't they put it on there for like real cheap? Fuck, why can't somebody just come up with this?
Well, and they put those other fights on HBO Latino that aren't as good as it. And the sad thing of it is that, you know, these fights, a lot of the hardcore boxing fans, you know, let's just say that both got, you know, both the favorites win and you get an Estrada-Gonzalez rematch, that's going to be one of the most anticipated fights if it was this year or next year or whatever. And most people would have that on their, you know, top five, top ten fights that they would look forward to. So,
and especially after this year.
Right. And the fact we're going to get, you know, hundreds of fights on the premium network, you know, and not that I'm total xenophobe, because I realize that, like, they will be available on Spanish language networks and all that, and maybe there is even some fringe, you know, cable network that's showing it in English. I'm not sure. But, you know, I like the HBO production value. I mean, and this is a, these are real, you know, big-time fights in those weight classes, and they, I think they deserve that platform, and that's the type of thing that would, you know, get the spot, put the spotlight on the smaller weight classes.
Well, it's a perfect example of, like, an oligarchy in boxing. Hopefully we have people who have taken history classes or social studies or some shit at this point. But basically, the sport being controlled, I know you haven't, but, you know, hopefully we got a couple of intelligent listeners here. So you have a handful of people at the top of the sport controlling almost everything and creating a false sense of, you know, it's basically, in other words, saying Broner Taylor, Matisse Ortiz, or I can't even fucking remember his name anymore. Is it Ortiz? I don't know. So,
and not just,
so, so it's basically saying that, yeah, it's basically saying that these are the fights that are important. These are the fights that deserve to be showcased on a network like Showtime, which made some serious headway on HBO in the last year and a half to 2 years, and is now considered, you know, basically just about in line with HBO as far as the quality of the boxing and all that type of stuff. And so essentially putting these fights on is saying these are the fights that you should care about, not the fights that we're not putting on. And that's wrong. It's just wrong. It's not correct. It's not in line with what the fans want. And so I'm constantly asking questions like this, but how do we get the networks to start listening and saying, you know, like, hey, this isn't what the fans even want? I mean, do they get something out of making sure that we're, like, underfoot and that we don't like the product we're being given? That's what I'm not understanding. Like, wouldn't they profit more by getting more people interested and keeping them happy?
You have to take that up with Rick Glaser.
Get him on the horn, Rick.
Well, listen, man, enough, you know, grousing about the incompetent network executives, which they are clearly, but, how do you see these two fights? Cause you're probably a lot more familiar with the fighters and, you know, well, give me your technical breakdowns here.
Well, like I said earlier, I think that Akira Yagashi. What's that?
Yeah, we'll begin with Roman Gonzalez and Yagashi.
Oh, okay. Is that how you want it?
Well, I mean, are you going Gonzalez highlight reel knockout?
No, I don't know. I think that the prevailing opinion among the folks that are, you know, real excited for this is that Roman Gonzalez is a really hard puncher, and he's probably going to still be a really hard puncher a couple pounds up. You know, I think that, like you said earlier, once you get down to really low weight classes where the weight difference is just a few pounds, I think that it's a little bit more like splitting hairs as far as, you know, how is he going to carry the weight? Unless a dude is seriously like 4'7" or something like that, where he has like a really serious limitation, I think that there's probably not going to be that big a difference, and he's probably still going to hit pretty fucking hard. I think that's a fairly safe assumption to make. And, you know, there's a decent style contrast there because Gonzalez, you know, he's a good boxer, but he's obviously a puncher, while Yagashi is probably a little bit more the boxer. So it's kind of a boxer-puncher type of matchup, even though it's not, you know, a real classic boxer-puncher matchup in that sense. But the point is, Gonzalez can bang. Yagashi isn't a sitting duck, but he can be hit. And if you give Roman Gonzalez that opportunity, he's pretty dangerous. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Roman Gonzalez is probably going to wind up catching him sooner or later. Probably later would be my guess. And,
yeah, he's probably going to be walking away with that belt and that title, I think. But I think that the Estrada fight is a little bit more interesting because getting Juan Francisco Estrada to engage isn't really that difficult. And obviously Segura is the puncher in that matchup. But it's not really that often you see little guys like that with serious fight-ending power. And while Segura obviously is kind of getting advanced in the years, he's 32, they do say power is the last thing to go. And we saw that against, you know, Marquez in a pretty fun fight, although I think that now we're probably looking at Hernan Marquez and saying, maybe he wasn't super good to begin with. Very fun, very entertaining, and, you know, not bad at all, but maybe he wasn't super good to begin with. So I'm kind of wondering if that wasn't a little bit of, you know, an illusion in that fight as far as Giovanni Segura being, you know, quote-unquote, back. So that said, Estrada lived through Gonzalez too. You know, he came through that fight okay, and he got hit plenty. So I'm thinking that he's probably going to be able to withstand Segura's punching power, even though, you know, Segura might be a little bit larger than Gonzalez and a little bit more experienced too. But point is, I think that Estrada is probably going to push a pace that Segura is not going to want. I'm thinking Estrada is probably going to wind up taking a decision there.
Yeah, I think it's tough too with the two, you know, kind of underdogs here with Yagashi and Segura, both being over 30 at such a lightweight class where, you know, they say that, you know, the fighters don't age well. I mean, kind of harder to have longevity there when you're constantly cutting to make weight. And, you know, against two guys who are probably, you know, just better fighters, I think. I mean, I think Gonzalez is a lot more proven than Estrada is, but, you know, Estrada, just what he showed in that loss and also coming back and beating Brian Valoria, and the, you know, both of them just being right in their primes, I would be surprised, you know, I would be shocked if Gonzalez loses. I'd be pretty surprised, I think, if Segura can pull it off. But like you said, he does have that power, and, you know, they're both really good fights. Do we know what the television situation is? I mean, I know it's out there.
Yes. What's it called? Juan Francisco Estrada versus Segura is going to be shown on BN, which I didn't even know about. I didn't even know this was a channel that existed until our buddy Cliff Rold pointed it out. And they actually show quite a bit of boxing. It's a Mexican channel, and it comes with, like, I have the AT&T, I think it's like a sports package or something. But it comes with that, apparently, and I didn't even know I had it. But then when I went to go look for it, lo and behold, we're showing some other older fight just randomly. So
yeah,
it's a channel that apparently shows a lot of boxing.
Okay, so
that's
going to
be shown on there. Yeah, that's going to be shown on there. And then I know for sure that a local – this is where the hashtag purist shit comes in, because I had to go look for this. But apparently a local Tokyo television station is going to be broadcasting the Akira Yagashi-Roman Gonzalez fight. So I would imagine that somebody's probably going to try to find that and stream it. But –
I'll look for it.
Yeah, well, you know, set up your black box, I guess, or something. What the fuck? Yeah,
that's me in rare purist form. Is that going to be on in the morning on Friday then, like our time?
Usually when like Japanese events start, it's like around 1, 2, 3 in the morning.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'll stay up with my daughter, my 4-year-old daughter. We'll watch that shit. But, yeah, so that's, I guess, part of the reason, too, like you brought up earlier with the lower weight thing, is that not a lot of this shit is, like, available. We have to go out of our way to find it. And, you know, we will if we're dedicated enough and, you know, we'll be able to find it. There's, you know, downloads and, you know, the internet will find a friggin' way, but it takes effort. You know, you have to go look for it, which is a pain in the ass. And that's why, that's also part of the importance of that HBO and Showtime thing. It's prepackaged for you. It's right there. just go to HBO rather than having to, you know, seek this shit out. Sometimes even just, you know, finding fights on, you know, TV Azteca and Univision and shit like that is like, holy shit, man. It's delayed even though it happened like an hour from my house. It's delayed like 4 hours on television. It's ridiculous. So it's kind of just stupid. That the way that it's laid out is like not convenient for boxing fans because at the end of the day, it's just not really an important sport to these networks, which is unfortunate because it's pretty important to us, obviously, because we have a fucking 2-hour podcast about it every week.
That is true.
So
clearly not important.
Well,
pretty low on the pecking order of sports, you know.
Yeah, and that's it is because we are literally on like Friday night fights getting pushed back like 40 minutes because of like high school volleyball World Series. That says it all.
Yeah, no respect.
Yeah, we're basically the Rodney Dangerfields of the sporting world. So.
I get more ashamed every day to admit that I'm a fan.
Yeah, pretty much. When I on my LinkedIn profile, I was like, do I even put that shit? Yeah, and I made a LinkedIn profile. I was like, should I even put that? Maybe that might even prevent me from getting jobs.
I wouldn't hire you.
No, I wouldn't fucking hire me either. Did you happen to look at the Carl Frampton versus Kiko Martinez matchup at all?
I saw that it's coming up. I think it's a pretty good fight.
Did you see the first one?
I think I did, but I can't remember it. Frampton won, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Well,
yeah, I feel like I did, but I just my short-term memory is just not quite what it once was. I guess I'm probably more familiar with Martinez because he's been on. Who did he just beat to get that belt? Damn you, now I gotta look this all up.
Well, he's actually been on a pretty decent little run. He beat Jonathan Romero to get the belt that he has, and then he beat Jeffrey Matabula and then Hozumi Hasegawa. I mean, you know, this isn't a
row here.
But
that is a good run.
Yeah, he's on a pretty decent run. You know, like his last four fights have been in, well, shit, go back even longer than that. It's in his last, like, 10 fights he's fought in Ireland, France, the UK, Argentina, Spain, and Japan. In the U.S., if I didn't say that already. So, yeah, he's kind of doing a world traveling bit. The first Carl Frampton fight, which was, incidentally, pretty good, it wound up being Carl Frampton stopping him in 9 rounds. And it was a decent fight. It was like Kiko Martinez pressing the action for a lot of the fight, and he kind of has a almost like a swarming style. Does a lot of like bobbing and weaving and trying to get in inside, you know, stuff like that. And Carl Frampton was using his feet, countering him pretty well. But it was like an entertaining fight, and it was fairly back and forth until Kiko Martinez walked right into, I think it was a right hand in the 9th round, and it just kind of put him down. And when he got up, he was like in no shape to continue. But since then, that was like, you know, about 18 months ago or so. And since then, he's kind of been on, like a streak. Like I said, it's not murderer's row type of shit, but it's fairly impressive considering he got stopped by Carl Frampton and then just kind of bounced back to beat 4 fighters in the span of like, you know, a little over a year. So, yeah, I'd have to say this just kind of adds to the weekend. With all the flyweight stuff, this is a nice little cherry on top. I'm probably not going to be able to watch it live, but we'll see.
I'm going to try to. It might give me a good excuse not to spend time with my wife on Saturday.
Hopefully she doesn't see the show.
No, she would never listen to it.
Okay,
she tried to get on Twitter and couldn't figure it out. Thankfully.
Oh, okay.
Delete my entire, but
yeah, that's kind of a blessing in disguise, I'd have to say. But I mean, and actually, that kind of reminds me, I'm going to be like switching schedules and shit pretty soon here, so I'm going to have Saturdays off. So I actually will be able to watch these European cards live. which is kind of nice and will make me even more pathetic of a boxing fan.
Nice. Yeah, I don't like, what's the big fight? Is it Carl Frampton against Scott Quigg? That's kind of like the potentially big domestic fight over there that they might be looking to build towards at 122.
Yeah, there's a couple. Like, there's a couple fights that, you know, seem like they'd be pretty big, like, regional type of fights in the UK. For example, you know, the one that they're looking at right now seems like Carl Froch versus James DeGale. I mean, that isn't, like, super highly anticipated, it seems. However, they are kind of looking at that as a big regional type of matchup, similar to the whole, you know, Frostgroves thing, just on a lower level. But, yeah,
I like Quigg.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting fight, but I think that fight might be difficult enough for Froch that if he won, he might just retire. But
my sources tell me that the Gale is the real deal.
Well,
by sources, I mean, I know a British guy who thinks the Gale is awesome.
Oh, well, you're no Glazer, dude. Sorry.
Not in terms of scouting.
You're just no Glazer, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I mean, Carl Frampton, he seems like a pretty good fighter anyway. He's unbeaten. They call him the Jackal. So he's named after a really bad Bruce Willis movie. So, yeah, it should be pretty interesting. And, like I said, it just kind of adds to a weekend that, you know, the U.S. stuff, not so good. The rest of it,
it's
pretty good.
And we'll save all of our like Peter Frampton, you know, song references until Carl Frampton wins a couple more fights. Once he gets on the real world,
I haven't looked yet, but I would be shocked if someone hasn't used the Frampton Comes Alive thing yet.
Oh, it's
in
it's,
an article
it's
title.
Happened.
It has to have. I haven't seen it, but I mean, come on, if I'm an editor, I'm like, I'm calling that Frampton Comes Alive and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, if it hasn't, though, that might be explain some of the reasons why most boxing writers are virgins, like you mentioned earlier.
That's true. That is true.
It's just begging.
I mean, I don't know. If I'm Carl Frampton, though, I'd be coming out to Do You Feel, you know, in parentheses, like I do.
It's
just me, though.
Hey, are you excited for Ricardo Mayorga's comeback?
You said something about that, but I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I saw that today. There's a card in, like, Oklahoma City with Mayorga, Sam Peter, and Yuri Boy Campus.
Shut the fuck up. You got to be kidding
all
me.
All fighting TBAs at the moment.
You're joking, right?
No, it happened. I'm serious.
Where'd you see it? On Fight News or something?
On Twitter. The most
reliable
source.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Well, I just scrolled down, like, you know, a half inch on Fight News, and former champions Ricardo Mayorga and Samuel Peter return September 27th in Oklahoma City. Something, something, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they don't have. And Yuri Boy. Are you serious? Yuri Boy?
Mm-hmm.
That fool has been on a farewell tour for like 7 years. That dude is the Rolling Stones of fucking boxing. That motherfucker drank Indian potion before the De La Hoya fight, and they used that as a marketing tool before the fight. That dude knocked down Felix Trinidad and got knocked out in like, what was that, like 93 or something. What the fuck? Holy shit, dude. I don't know if I feel old or if I should just continue my rant here and just keep going. I don't know what to do. I'm bewildered.
Which one of those guys would you rather see coming back? None of the above?
I don't know. I mean, I guess at least with Mayorga, you're going to get, like, some antics, and that's funny. You know, like, at least with Mayorga, you know that it's going to be – there's going to be some shit, but
I think might have something left.
Maybe.
I'm not close to Mayorga Chavez Jr.
Oh, my gosh.
With just no weight limit?
Yeah, with no rules, no weight limit, no shoes, no nothing.
Chavez doesn't have a weight limit but Mayorga gets to do like MMA kicks. I'd watch it.
Yeah, you got to offset it with like different rules for each of them. All right, fine. Here. All right, fine. I got it. We do fuck, marry, kill with Ricardo Mayorga, Sam Peter, and Yuri Borkampis. Go.
Oh man, you just put me on the spot.
That's a tough one.
You know, man, I think I gotta. Oh man, I gotta marry Yuri Borkampis, bang Mayorga, and kill Sam Peter.
Wow.
How about you?
All right. Well, I have to say, all right, I'm gonna go with fuck Yuri Borkampis because I'm into cougars. Mary,
he's got a sweet mustache too.
Dude, that guy is a Super Mario brother, and I'm gonna have to marry Sam Peter because he will threaten to kill me because he needs a green card, marriage style. And I'm going to go ahead and kill Ricardo Mayorga because he is fucking dangerous to the planet. And I would be doing
that's
humanity awesome. A favor. I'm sorry. Hopefully somebody laughed
another
because
great,
that's all I was looking
another
for.
Great, just another great man struck down in the prime of his life.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's...
I like Mayorga. Man, I would have Mayorga Berto someday. You know, like...
Dude, I'm thinking that, you know, we do a Mayorga-Berto series. You do the first one in Haiti, second one in Nicaragua, third one in Atlantic City.
Well, they should do one BKB, one boxing, and one MMA.
That would be solid.
Brother come in and do, like, pretend to be him for the MMA fight.
Yeah, Edison Berto. He wound up getting knocked out pretty bad on whatever that was, Elite XC or something like that. I remember that a couple years ago. That was pretty bad.
Didn't Mayorga like knee some guy and got disqualified or something?
I don't even know. I honestly don't. I think he wound up getting choked out. Like he got choked out, but it looked like a kind of like a baby choke, and it was for like about a second and a half. And he's like, all right, I'm out. You know, after trying like to throw a couple hard punches, he's like, nah, all right, we're good.
He's definitely among my favorite fighters to say that his opponent looks like his son's ass.
Man, he had some zingers for Vernon Forrest, dude. I'll tell you that much. I remember in the rematch, during the entire promotion, he kept referring to him as my son. Like, my son over there is talking all this trash, and I was like, oh, man. Coming up to the scale with a piece of pizza and shit.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Dude, man.
But I guess the act's gotten a little bit old.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, it's like he's only getting attention because he's like, you know, acting out. And so in a way, we're basically just perpetuating these shitty things about boxing that we're always complaining about. But at the same time, you know, sometimes we just do need cheap entertainment.
For sure. And, I mean, this guy's been involved in some of the greatest, like, you know, shit-talking and bizarre smoking in the ring and all sorts of that type of stuff. So always have some love for the guy.
Yeah, well, having to get separated with the plexiglass thing from Fernando Vargas during, like, the weigh-in and the face-off and shit was pretty epic as well, I have to say.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Well, it's so funny. It's like he actually seemed to really get under Vargas' skin, whereas, like, I thought Oscar was just pretending, like, you know, his classic, like, Oscar just acting like he, like, you know, was so angry about it, but probably didn't really give a shit.
Yeah, well, and then the fucked up thing was that Oscar wound up going in there and, like, beating the shit out of him. Oscar was just like, oh, you're going to talk shit about my fan? No, that doesn't even sound like Oscar at all, but he went in there and beat the shit out of him.
Well,
you know what? I have to say that, you know, of all these guys that we're talking about here and bringing up Berto, one of the classic Berto memories for me is him going on Twitter after the Valero, after Edwin Valero pulled his, you know, his little stunt
I guess that's kind of downplaying it. He murdered his wife and child and then killed himself. But so yeah, so after that whole thing, fucking Berto goes on Twitter and says, man, women are a motherfucker, boy. Rest in peace, Edwin Valero. I was like, oh, Jesus. All right, so that's who we're dealing with.
He's never really been, like, praised for his intelligence, you know, in or out of the ring.
Nah, you know, I heard he turned down acceptance to Mensa from Bobby Chez.
Really?
Oh, yeah, Bobby Chez, right, yeah. Bobby Chez invited him into Mensa.
And yet Berto is still probably, like, more articulate than Bobby Chez ever was.
He's got to be, like, pound for pound, one of the worst ever commentators ever, like, allowed in boxing. When he was on Showtime for a while, that was horrible, dude.
He was horrible.
Ugh. And then he got, like, 4 DUIs. So much for Mensa there, buddy.
Ferdy Pacheco's on the broadcast team, and he's not the worst guy on the broadcast team. That's really saying something.
Oh, man. Bad shit, dude. Yeah, he was bad. Well, let's see. What else is going on in the boxing world right now that we can talk about? Because we already previewed all the shit from this weekend.
I haven't seen
really
much, just the Peter Quillin shit, you know?
Well, have you been paying much attention to the Hopkins-Kovalev promotion? And I mean, that's basically what has been going on while we've been doing the show for the most part, so you probably didn't catch that. But over in Philly, they were doing some promotional shit for, I mean, dude, Bernard Hopkins looks like fucking Ossie Davis and shit, dude. He has the Carl Weathers beard. He looks like almost like Carl Weathers from Happy Gilmore, when Carl Weathers was in Happy Gilmore, and has that like somewhat graying beard and shit. Damn, how is that dude alive right now?
Bernard Hopkins, Carl Weathers, or Bernard Hopkins?
Either one, dude. More like Carl Weathered. Am I right?
Maybe. No. I gotta run that by Grice and get the officials.
Yeah, no.
Pun approval.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's old. That's one of the big selling points here, right?
It is. It's pretty much the point in this part. It's the selling
point
because his style fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's kind of like why I feel that Kovalev, in some ways, ironically, because it's the biggest fight of his life and the biggest platform, you know, and the huge opportunity, it's kind of almost like a no-win proposition for him, because if he just brutally knocks out Bernard Hopkins, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, like hardcore boxing fans who have been following and frustrated with Hopkins at various points in his career are going to, you know, rejoice over it. But to the average person who just tunes in, you're seeing kind of like a 50-year-old icon get, you know, violently concussed and knocked out or whatever. It might be unsettling to a lot of people. At the same time, if Kovalev struggles at all, or if Hopkins somehow beats him, you know, he's basically going to be considered to be, you know, exposed in a lot of quarters, even though Hopkins is still a good, really good fighter, and we know that. But anyone at 49 years old, you know, it's hard to say that a really great fighter in their prime shouldn't be able to handle somebody with that type of a physical and age disadvantage. And so, you know, I just think that Kovalev, his best case scenario is going to be a little uncomfortable for some people to watch, meaning that he's going to end up hurting a guy who's 50 years old and who's kind of a, you know, self-proclaimed legend anyway. But, you know, worst case, I mean, if Kovalev struggles at all, I think you have to say that he's, you know, limited, because How can a 50-year-old man beat a great fighter in their prime?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's obviously Bernard Hopkins is a physical anomaly. You know, like there's no debating that. For me, the issue is watchability, and that's what it has been for a handful of years now. It just comes down to, I just don't really want to watch his style anymore. But I mean, past that, like, you know, getting into the age thing, when he's that age, it's just like, I feel like he could just kind of fall apart at any point. It could just come at any time, and that's also part of the appeal
towards watching him. I mean, I just don't see the appeal in his style, so I can't imagine it's much past just like a Ripley's Believe It or Not, like this dude is 50 years old and still whooping ass thing, which is totally respectable, and I'm not going to talk down to the dude because of the accomplishment. It's just, yeah, it's the watchability thing. So I think there is that possibility that he could just get in there and, you know, Sergey Kovalev is a strong dude. He's, you know, fairly quick for a heavy-handed puncher. You know, he's not super quick, but he's probably going to be in there, you know, quicker than Hopkins thinks would be my guess. But, you know, that could that's a total, you know, not a likely scenario, but it's a possible scenario that Bernard Hopkins could just fall apart.
Well, I think we already have seen him over time deteriorate pretty significantly in terms of, like, physical speed and everything, and he's made up for it with his kind of his wiles and being able to slow down the fights and be so methodical and get his opponents to kind of be more tentative. But, you know, it's just one of those fights where, you know, Kovalev's never going to get credit for beating a prime Bernard Hopkins because,
yeah,
I mean, Hopkins is not in his prime anymore. You know, and he hasn't been, even some of his biggest wins, like against Kelly Pavlik, you probably like the tail end of his prime, you know? So
yeah,
it's just one of those where I just don't think, I think that, you know, because this year has been so terrible and also because it was so surprising that it was made with Hopkins going back to HBO, I think people have kind of made it into a bigger fight than it really is. You know, I mean, there's no doubt Hopkins is a top, top contender at light heavyweight still, and he's the best fighter that Kovalev has faced. But, you know, he's not getting a prime Bernard Hopkins in there, and it will really be, I think, as much of a testament to maybe Kovalev's, you know, limitations as to Bernard's kind of, you know,
yeah,
internal greatness if Hopkins is able to have some success in that fight. But, you know, like I said before, I mean, I really do believe in Kovalev, and I think he's gonna have a dominant night, and I think he's probably is gonna pretty badly hurt Bernard Hopkins, and Hopkins will get rescued. But, you know, it looks like kind of a 50-50 fight in terms of the way that the fans are picking it, and I know a lot of people are jumping on the Hopkins bandwagon. Because, you know, in terms of just style, Kovalev fits the mold of the types of fighters that Hopkins has been really successful of in the past. But, you know, beating Bernard Hopkins in 2014 does not necessarily mean that you are, you know, a great fighter. It doesn't, you know, I mean, I think there's ways to do it, and we saw Chad Dawson, and he followed that up by kind of inexplicably going down to 168 and getting destroyed by Andre Ward, you know, and doesn't appear to be the same guy. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Kovalev is, you know, beating Bernard Hopkins, we're going to say, oh, Kovalev's like one of the greatest, best fighters in the sport now. But I think it's more about the kind of, to the general fan, popularity, getting exposure, getting into a big fight, that type of thing. But again, it's like I do think there may be some backlash on that because Hopkins has become,
yeah,
such a sentimental favorite, and because he's so old, you know, it's like the Michael Jordan on the Wizards. It was awesome when he would show flashes of the old Jordan and go for 40 points, you know, when he was 40 years old. And, you know, now it's hard not to root for Hopkins because it's amazing what he's doing at that age. So I think that if Kovalev does have a really exceptional night and just kind of destroys him and makes Hopkins, you know, this version of Hopkins doesn't belong in the ring with the guy, I think people are going to say, well, look, Hopkins was 49. He beat the 49-year-old's ass. Like, big deal. Fight Adonis Stevenson now, you know? And it's just the way that,
yeah,
boxing fans are so kind of fickle and cynical. It's like, I do think that Kovalev, you know, but Kovalev negates a lot of that because he's so likable and he has such an exciting style that, you know, assuming that he gets past Hopkins, we're still going to want to see his next fight. We're going to want to see him go from there. But I do think that Adonis Stevenson is a bigger test, you know, and that's a fight that should have to happen too.
No, you do bring up actually a really good point because, you know, past the stuff that you're talking about, I mean, past the potential backlash, you know, for a guy beating up on an old man, as it were, you know, past all of that, there is a legitimate threat here too. I think that this is the type of fight that, you know, look beyond the surface where the dude is, you know, 50 years old. If you look beyond that, as you said, again, there's the idea of the backlash, but, you know, sorry to repeat myself, but beyond that, it's more of a Sergey Kovalev might win, but look really bad type of thing. He might have to win super ugly. He might have to mug the shit out of Bernard Hopkins to the point where, I mean, you know, and this is kind of speculation on my part, and some might take it as an insult. I mean, I just think it's reality. I feel like Bernard Hopkins would be one of the most difficult dudes to knock out clean ever. He strikes me as the type of dude that would more likely foul himself out and DQ himself on purpose than straight up allow himself to get knocked out. That's just, I just get that feeling. I could be wrong. Somebody wants to call me on it. That's cool. But it's a dangerous fight for Kovalev for that reason. I think that there's a very good chance that he comes out of this not really looking that great. The only way he can really look great is by just clean knocking Hopkins out. And as you said, there's a potential negative to that.
Well, you know, Hopkins is still clearly competing on a really, really high level, you know, and there's no doubt that, like, you know, and he's Bernard Hopkins, you know, like, so Kovalev's going to deserve credit if he gets that win. But I do think that it's not the same as, you know, a guy 10 years ago beating Bernard Hopkins at middleweight at his very best. You know, it's
yeah.
still, and I think that, I just hope that Kovalev continues on the path that he's on and doesn't pull kind of the Danny Garcia move, you know, win the big fight and then kind of scale back, because there's some concern about, you know, Adonis Stevenson. That fight probably is not going to happen because of the bullshit network politics and all that. And if that doesn't happen, you know, what does Kovalev have left at 175? You know, I mean, eventually would Andre Ward go up and take that fight? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting – I think the best thing for Kovalev is he's going to have probably the most eyeballs that have ever been on him in a fight, and it's definitely going to be, you know, one of the bigger profile, maybe the biggest, you know, non-pay-per-view fight of the year. And so in terms of exposure, it's great for Kovalev. I just think that, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. I don't always want to be negative. I mean, I'm really looking forward to
sure.
seeing the fight.
Yeah,
and seeing how,
no,
like, how
me too.
Out, you know?
It's a very interesting fight.
But, you know, but it's just a testament to how bad 2014 has been that is, like, the gold standard fight this year,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, like, that's, like, what we got for the rest of the year. They're like, you know, MMA is like, all right, we got blah, 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 and we got UFC 947 coming up, and we're like, bitch, we got Hopkins Kovalev. And they're like, huh? Who's that? So, yeah, yes, I'm with you on that one. So it seems as though pretty much every time we talk about Sergey Kovalev, it's just a given. I mean, I don't know if it's like if it's just kind of a, I don't know, ethnocentric type of thing that we bring up Sergey Kovalev. And since, you know, Gennady Golovkin is from a place that is closer to where Sergey Kovalev is from than where we are from, we have to automatically bring him up too. But, you know, is a vaunted puncher and another dude who seems to be kind of held back from opportunities, except for, you know, Sergey Kovalev is getting the opportunity that Golovkin seems to be begging for at this point. You know, how much is he begging for it is kind of up for debate. But it seems as though Gennady Golovkin really wants that big fight. So the big fight would be either against Miguel Cotto or Canelo, it seems. Maybe Andre Ward, although that's kind of a non-factor right now with Andre Ward pretty much not being a fighter at this moment. But so the last couple days, I've been reading that one of the guys I mentioned, Canelo, might be matched up with Josh motherfucking Clotty. Give us your reaction to that, James.
Pretty odd choice. I mean, I haven't heard from Plotty in years, and can't remember the last time he actually won a meaningful fight. So doesn't really make much sense. I don't think he's really got a big name, even despite that he was, you know, B-side in the paper, you know, fought Pacquiao, fought Cotto. I don't know. Did Plotty just beat Mundine or something?
I don't even
know. What was Claudio's last fight? Whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, Claudio, assuming that you get something close to, you know, a prime version of Claudio, I mean, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, and especially that Canelo just fought a guy with kind of a, you know, a propensity for making his opponents look bad in Arislandi Lara. I mean, I think Lara is a relatively clean boxer, and so is Claudio, but, you know, neither guy is really, you know, easy to look good against, and Clowdy's clearly, you know, seems to be kind of past his prime. It doesn't really make sense, does it? I mean, I think a fight like James Kirkland would seem to be, you know, equally winnable and much more exciting and much more, you know, kind of palatable. But I don't know, man. I guess I'm just kind of scratching my head over that.
No, it doesn't really. I mean, no, it's not done. And that's kind of what I was about to bring up, is that I've seen a few people bring up that they may be trying to leverage James Kirkland a little bit, because I don't know if you remember, but James Kirkland has more or less been out of action, partially because of his legal issues, but also because he's made a couple of head-scratching career moves. Like, I believe it was actually Canelo who had offered him a fight, and it was like a sum that, you know, sounded totally legit and sounded like it was a good price, and he was like, no, that's not enough. And so he had basically priced himself out of a fight that he really should not have priced himself out of. So now that's what they're talking about making again, is basically pitting Canelo Alvarez against James Kirkland as an appetizer for Canelo Cotto at sometime in the future. That's kind of what it sounds like they're trying to do. And so my whole point of bringing that part up anyway was that it leaves Golovkin out in the cold. But the Canelo Claudio fight, I don't really get it. I mean, if they're serious and it isn't just a leveraging type of move, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Claudio is a dude who's tough to look good against. He doesn't really open up a whole lot half the time. I mean, in his last big performance, it was against Manny Pacquiao, where he totally just, like, I mean, he, like, disgraced himself. It was horrible. He just put up his arms the entire time, and Manny Pacquiao, like, beat him up. It was stupid. And it was a total, like, 180 from, like, his pretty solid effort over Zab Judah. You know, he fought Miguel Cotto pretty close. You know, he kept it semi-close against Margarito, when Margarito was a feared guy. You know, I mean, he kind of became a villain a little bit in beating the shit out of Diego Corrales. But regardless, you know, he kind of seems to kind of, you know, operate in waves, and he's been off. The Manny Pacquiao fight was, what was that, 2009 through 2010? So here we are 4 years on. The only thing he's done is beat Mundeen, like you said. And at this point, who gives a shit about anybody beating Anthony Mundeen? So, or sorry, Anthony, because he's my boy, Anthony Mundeen. So, I don't know. This fight is just one of those fights where I'm kind of just like, huh. I don't even know how they came up with that one. I don't even know whose hat they drew Claudio's name out of.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, Claudio's not like a scrub. I mean, he was a really good welterweight in his day. But, you know, he just hasn't really been relevant in a few years. So it's just a really weird name to kind of pull out and for an opponent. And, yeah, he fought Mundeen and beat Mundeen. But what, you know, what has Mundeen done? Beat Shane Mosley, you know, the 7th loss in a row for Shane Mosley. So I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Definitely not.
I mean, on
pay-per-view, you know.
Well, hey, you know, if they really are trying to do the leveraging thing, hey, I like Canelo Kirkland, even though Kirkland has been, you know, out of commission and whatnot. He's the type of guy that at least you know what to expect. You know what he's going to do. He's going to come in there and he's going to throw hard, and there's a pretty good chance he's going to at least get hurt at some point in the fight. And then there's also a decent chance he's going to, like, roar back like a fucking wild animal. So, you know, this is a good fight. That's a fight I'd like to see. So then throwing that out there and then being like, well, you know, we're also thinking about Claudio too. Huh? All right.
Well,
I hope.
Yeah, I hope that's what it is. You know, and I mean, I love Canelo Kirkland. I think that would be an awesome fight. You know, Kirkland still, I mean, he's just a really exciting fighter to watch. His kick and punch, he's so active, and he does have that kind of gets hurt a lot and gets back up. And, you know, he's strung together. I mean, he beat the crap out of Glenn Tapia. He came back and just looked like a, you know, career-ending beatdown of Angulo, although Angulo came back pretty well, I guess. Kind of got the favorable disqualification against Carlos Molina. But, you know, yeah, Kirkland's a guy who at least in the last couple of years has been in there with some top junior middleweights and does have a really exciting style. So, you know, I think that'd be a great fight for Alvarez. one that he could potentially look you know, really good in. Against Clotty, I mean, I don't, you know, if Clotty covers up and Canelo just kind of, you know, throws a lot of punches, I mean, there's just no point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fight that just doesn't really make any sense. So I don't even know where the hell they got it, but, you know, whatever. I guess if there's some type of light at the end of the tunnel, I'll watch and everything, but I'm sick. I need help. So
well,
don't take me, don't judge. Don't use me as like the measuring stick.
Well, dude, I'm watching Jermaine Taylor or Sam Soliman, so I can't criticize anyone's. But, like, it's just we're all
in
the waiting pattern for Canelo's photo.
Aren't you assigned to the clinch count for that fight?
Yeah, I'm doing clinch count for that one.
Yeah, you got your credential for that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just making sure. Yeah, I got people I could call if it didn't happen, so.
Well, I'm going to, I got my credential for the Antonio Tarver-Jonathan Banks fight, so we have to see how that goes first.
That's another fight that I'm, whatever. I guess it is what it is, because heavyweight's what the fuck ever it is, but I just look at that matchup and I'm like, huh? Okay. Go for it, guys. Fucking Jonathan Banks and Antonio Tarver. Weird. Well, hey, dude, next month, in any event, you know, Golovkin isn't getting the big fight that he wanted, but he's getting the huge event against Rubio, Marco Antonio Rubio, that everybody's been clamoring for.
Yeah. You know,
we
talked about it, I think, 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's all right. You know, I think it'll be a good event. If that Donaire-Nicholas Walters fight is really on the undercard, I think that's awesome. You know, so, but I don't think Rubio really presents too much of a problem for Golovkin.
Yeah, I don't think so. He's fairly hittable, you know, was knocked out by Kofi Jontua, what was that, almost exactly 10 years ago? So, yeah, I'd have to say that it's pretty, I'd have to make Golovkin a pretty generous favorite, I'd have to say. Yeah, and I'm going there, by the way. I bought tickets, so shit's going to be awesome. And that actually reminds me, before I forget, if anybody, I'm not going to say it on Twitter, but if anybody who listens to the show it winds up going to Golovkin Rubio and sees me, hit me up. I'll have something for you. In a good way. In a non-sexual... Fuck, all right, I just fucked that up. I'll have something to give you. I will have an object. That doesn't make... All right, just hit me up.
Are you just trying to... Is this some kind of scheme to get, like, a drug mule or something? Like, you need to take this, take this package and...
Just don't open it. Whatever you do, don't open it, okay? Just don't open it. Drop it off. No, it's just hit me up. Just hit me up. That's all. I'll give you something awesome. So, I'm not super duper excited. I'm more excited just about seeing Golovkin in person, you know, because thus far he hasn't really been brought over to this side of the States. And so, you know, he's being showcased in a relatively smaller but really nice venue that, you know, pretty much anybody who's ever been to it loves it. And like you said, the co-feature, Nonito Donaire versus Nicholas Walters, that's a pretty interesting fight, and that's pretty high-quality stuff as far as, you know, a co-feature goes. And I think that I was actually talking about this with our good friend and somewhat frequent guest Jimmy Tobin the other day, because he was in San Diego kind of on vacation, and I was talking with him about it because he was at Brandon Rios versus Mike Alvarado 1, which was also at the StubHub Center. And so we were talking about that because Nonito Donaire had opened up – or no, I'm sorry, he headlined against Nishioka on that card. Like, he was the headliner. And so it wound up being just almost like a travesty, because he got booed so hard before he wound up stopping Nishioka, but he got booed so hard because, you know, fuck, dude, following an act like Rios Alvarado 1 is pretty tough, so I had sympathy for him there, but also the fight was just, like, dreadful. He just was, you know, not really wanting to open up.
You know, and Nonito has been criticized for stuff like that in the past where, like, he's, you know, not exciting enough, you know, and that's kind of up for debate. I guess it depends on whether or not you're a fan, et cetera, but now he's coming back, and he's the one that's you know, in the support bout here, and he's actually in a very interesting fight against the dude who, you know, mopped up Vic Darchinian not too long ago. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy going into this. I don't think that they've shown any of the other fights that they've made for the card yet, but even just those two fights, even though the main event is not, you know, super high quality, I think I'm kind of happy going to there.
Well, you got to try to do the Thomas Hauser, like, get embedded in Golovkin's locker room, ideally with a good, solid view of the showers.
Yeah, I actually placed a spy cam in his, so.
Oh, perfect.
Well,
when the
Golovkin
nudes
when the time is
we'll,
right.
We'll pretend like we didn't hear that.
Well, basically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to slide them into the middle of that package of boxing celebrity writers. You know, like you download zip files off of the Pirate Bay. So I'm just, like, sliding the footage in the middle of there so, like, nobody knows, and then it's just a nice little surprise when they're strolling through, like, you know, for example, like, the Mike Katz nudes that came out. There's that. Mike Katz had some nudes, you know. It was pretty solid. I don't know. So, I don't know. I hope people
I was surprised how much manscaping Katz had done. I mean, he keeps a real tight ship down there.
Dude, I mean, you're telling me. I've been picturing this guy for over a decade now. I mean, you gotta think about what this did to my memory and, like, you know, my psyche here. I don't know. It was magical.
Yeah, who would have thought? But man, I think it's a testament to how bad 2014 has been that over the past few months, probably the greatest boxing related video was Dan Rayfield's Ice Bucket Challenge, where he used what appeared to be a small salad bowl to dump the ice on his head.
Yes, dude, that's exactly what it was. It was one of those little salad bowls that comes in the spinner or whatever. That's exactly what it was. Come on, that was pretty weak. You know what, though? I will have to say, like, you know, I don't usually talk a whole bunch trash about Dan. You know, he's a ridiculous dude, and he tells jokes that got old, like, a long time ago, pretty much every single day, and he probably takes himself a little bit too seriously. However, I'm usually not on the, you know, anti-Dan Rayfield train, but I have to say I did crack up pretty hard at, like, his reaction when he poured the water over himself. It was good stuff, and, you know, the Velcro shoes, dude, that shit is just class. That's fucking class. I bet they're Keds.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. You know, I don't like to pile on to the guy too much because there's so many other people doing it already. But the biggest criticism here, I think, was the size of the bucket. But you know what they say, you know, small bucket.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you know, the size of that is true. You know, the size of the man's bucket is proportionate. Yeah. No, that's true. Oh,
well,
dude, we need help.
Talking about Katz and Rayfield's, you know, below the belt, any other writers we want to speculate about their, you know,
I think
their,
I'm good.
Their family jewels?
I think I'm good because I'm going to be going to a live fight in a couple weeks, and, you know, I won't have to kill nobody.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, Press Row is a dangerous place. So people have been slapped.
Yeah, that reminds me too. I haven't played the movie preview for a little while either too. I might end the show with that one just as a kind of, you know, for old time's sake. But no, I think that's it really. we kind of scraped the bottom of the barrel for the last like 40 minutes anyway. We kind of just ran with it. There wasn't really anything else. But, hey, dude, the year is going to close out a little bit stronger anyway. There is some more stuff coming. It's not like it's going to be, you know, total shite. And it's no 2013. It's definitely no 2013. But, you know, unfortunately, apart from
the main event in Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana 2. That looks like a card that is pretty shitty. However, that main event is decent, you know, and all right, no, I'm lying. That's pretty much all we got for the rest of the year. That's about it.
Oh, dude, Pacquiao-Algeri.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Pacquiao-Algeri, I think Chisora or Fury-Chisora 2 was rescheduled for the end of the year. Hopkins-Kovalev, like we brought up. So, I mean, there's a couple things. There's at least more bigger fights than we've had.
Canelo Quadi, Taylor Soldiman.
You know what, dude? I'm going to go ahead and just, like, go for Terrence Crawford versus Ray Beltran. That's my go-to. For the end of this year, that's my go-to fight.
That's a decent fight.
I think I'm going to ride that one, you know, apart from the fights this weekend.
What did you think of Taylor's shooting incident that potentially it put that
oh,
fight
Jesus.
In jeopardy? Because when I heard that, and I was like, Jesus, man, 2014 really does suck. Now that
dude.
Fight's, you know, potentially off the table, I mean.
Man, I just, you know, I'm not trying to, like, beat the dead horse here, dude. And, you know, we've pretty much only brought up Jermaine Taylor in a somewhat negative light in the past. But, I mean, it's kind of difficult not to. But I worry for the dude, seriously. And stuff like this makes me worry for him even more because, you know, I mean, there's no proof. But I just wonder if something like this, like, I don't know, a potentially violent outburst or a tendency to do something fucking crazy, like shoot someone who came into your house that you have a disagreement with, is not linked to getting knocked out really violently a handful of times and basically being told you needed to quit boxing and then coming back to it. That's worrisome.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
But the fight must go on.
But
so
the fight must go on. Well,
yeah,
when you have one fighter from a Little Rock, Arkansas rice paddy, tough as weeds. So, yeah, I feel bad for the dude because I really do wonder if that isn't a part of what's going on with him. But, yeah, dude, I don't know. Should he even be being given that opportunity in the first place? Probably not, man.
I agree.
So, yeah. So, that being said, we pretty much scraped the absolute bottom of the barrel bringing up Jermaine Taylor shooting somebody in his house. I mean,
yeah, well, you
totally
said that before, then I figured we had to at least mention that to make
yeah.
it complete. Get as
well,
much
next
sensation
week,
from
next week we'll be going on to the various trials and tribulations of Kelly Pavlik, I think. At least those two are linked, and there's some, you know, bond between them as far as getting into altercations at their house. And I don't know, Jermaine Taylor needs to be caught on like one of those lawnmowers with like a shotgun riding down the middle of the street one of these days in Little Rock, and then they're basically on par. Yeah, that's about all. So again, like I tweeted, I hope that Michael Katz never listens to our show because I've heard about him getting into altercations with his cane and neck brace previously, and I'd really like him to stay away from me. So that being said, I think that's it for the show. I think that we covered our bases there. But hey, you know, we took it almost the full limit, as the Eagles say, even though we hate the fucking Eagles. So everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back next week. We'll be recapping fights from last week, and there's some more stuff going on. We'll see who else gets arrested and whatnot. James, as always,
sir,
a pleasure.
Thank you.
So check out James' stuff, badlefthook.com. Check out my stuff, queensberryrules.com. And we'll see everybody later. Thanks again, and take it easy.